This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Episode 264 of your weekly Handgun World podcast coming right up.
Oh, this is Mark Vandenberg, the executive producer over at the Gun Rights Radio Network, and you're listening to the Handgun World podcast with your host, Bob Main. Now, hey, I got to meet Bob last year live, in person, and he's just as great in person as he is on the show.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre. But that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, this episode is basically three topics: AKs, hard work, and a little bit on training. And my guest is Glenn Tate, the author of the best-selling book, 299 Days. It's a 10-book series. 7 books are out. A lot of you have been reading his material. I've been reading it. A lot of you, thank you, have been going to my Amazon store on my website and buying his book there. Thank you very much. If you want to support the show, if you like what I'm doing, and you don't want to spend any extra money, I can relate to that. Go over to handgunworld.com. Go to my Amazon store. There's a direct link at handgunworld.com. You will see the Amazon store page up at the top of the menu. Click that and make your Amazon purchases through my store. Amazon gives me a little bit of a commission for doing that, and every little bit helps, folks. It helps support the show because I've made a decision to continue to keep this show as commercial-free as I possibly can for your listening enjoyment. So he's sold all these books, these 299 Days books. He's also a firearms enthusiast, and I think that pretty much is a good intro. So just a quick little intermission, and Glenn Tate will join me. Well, my special guest back again is Glenn Tate. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love coming on.
Yeah, I like having you on. We got a really cool topic, several topics actually to talk about. Let's go ahead and get started off with, you were telling me when we were offline that you have an AK sponsor.
Yeah, isn't that the craziest sentence you ever thought you'd hear or say? I have an AK sponsor. I mean, my goodness, it's like my ammunition sponsor, AmmunitionDepot.com. I remember the first time I uttered those words, I have an ammunition sponsor. It's like, wow, this is an amazing life. This is unusual. I didn't expect any of this. This is pretty cool. But Century Arms is my AK sponsor. It's odd for me to formulate those words just because it's such a neat thing, and I'm so happy about it. And I'm going to be helping them out. I'm going to be testing and evaluating their new C39 American-made, entirely American-made AK-47 with a milled receiver. I say testing and evaluation. It's already out and in production, so if I came up with any suggestions for them, it'd probably have to wait for some, you know, modification.
Other C-49, did you say?
C-39.
I'm going to, while we're talking, I'm going to Google it here real quick so I can put a link in the show. Oh, there it is. Yeah, 100% American-made AK. Cool.
Yeah, and so, and I'm not helping them develop it. I don't mean to exaggerate or anything, because that would be totally crazy if I were doing that. But it's out now. It just came out. I saw on a YouTube channel a 1,000-round torture test that was conducted of it. I need to be candid with your listeners. I've not fired it. I have, by the way, in the past, before any of this happened, purchased 3 Century Arms AKs. And I love them. The AK-47, the previous one, the one I got a couple years ago, in particular, is magnificent. The two AK-74s that I have from Century are also good. I mean, they were $435 list price guns a couple years ago. I think the MSRP on the new C-39 is $750 or so, and I seem to recall they can be had for around $699. So these are not very expensive AKs. I mean, that's right in line with, you know, a lot of other AKs, but they're not, you know, Romanian Wassers or something like that, that, you know, with the fit and finish not being so fantastic sometimes on a Wasser. You know, doggone it, American made. I mean, rails, Picatinny, I mean, all kinds of stuff that I think modern AK shooters want and need, and it's American made, which makes me happy on two levels. One, I like things being manufactured in the United States, and number two, things will be not dependent on a boatload of parts coming from a country or a part of the world that at any given time we could be in conflict with, and we wouldn't be getting any more imported parts kits, which is a problem. So I'm excited about it, so it should be coming in a couple weeks, and I can't wait to go out and give the thing some thorough testing / fun. Let's not forget the fun part of it either.
Well, now is this an AK rifle or pistol?
AK rifle.
It's an AK because they've got the pistol also for $632 at Bud's Gun Shop, but that's the pistol. Yeah, the totally American made AK is kind of a cool thing, you know. I got to add into here, most people probably know this, but just in case you don't know it, Mikhail Kalashnikov just recently passed on. And how interesting it is, you know, the man who designed probably the most prolific rifle in the world, shortly after he passes on, we introduce an American-made version of his gun.
Exactly.
Isn't that cool? I mean, you know, obviously the design is going to continue for quite some time.
Well, and Century Arms and other AK manufacturers are lucky that Mikhail Kalashnikov was born and raised and produces product in a country that is socialist, that does not have trademark and patent laws.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? You're the first one I've heard in a long time that said Mikhail Kalashnikov the right way.
Well, I'm not going to give too much away, but I do speak a little Russian. I'm just going to put it that way.
Well, that's why, because I butchered it. I just made an attempt there, and I guess it didn't work. But that's pretty cool. So you're being sponsored by Century Arms, and they're going to send you a C-39. Now, are they going to send you in 7.62 caliber or the 5.45 that you like?
7.62x39, as I understand it, that's currently the only caliber it's being made in. And I say currently, I'm not implying that it will be made in 5.45x39. I don't know that it will or will not. It's just that that's the one that's out now. And I am a big fan of 5.45x39. We had an entire episode about the magic of the wonderful AK-74, and which
right.
I think is the kind of the ultimate budget prepper rifle, and we'll go into all the details of why, but it's coming in 7.62, and you know, I don't dislike 7.62x39. It's an amazing caliber. It's in some ways it's easier to get a hold of ammunition than it is 5.45. It's a little bit more expensive, 7.62 is, but you know, I don't discriminate. I love 7.62, 5.45, and 5.56. I believe in diversity, so I love all calibers.
You're an equal opportunity gun enthusiast.
Exactly.
Well, you know, you were saying it's a good prepper rifle, and yeah, we did have a conversation about that aired, I think, a little over a month ago. But also, I want to say something about AKs. You know, I think they very unfairly get a bad rap of being an inaccurate rifle, and I think that's not true at all. Most people, I've seen a lot of Suarez International instructors run an AK, and these guys are good with it. And I've seen people be very, very accurate with an AK. Now, am I saying as accurate as an AR-15? No, inherently. But I tell you what, in the hands of an operator that knows what he or she is doing, you can do a real good job with an AK. You can get the job done, and let's face it, it's been getting the job done since 1947.
Exactly. And the Century Arms AKs that I've already owned and you know, before this all started with the sponsorship thing, have been very, very accurate. And you're right, there no AK that I've ever shot is AR material as far as accuracy goes. But we're talking about small differences, and I'm not going to try to hit something at 600 yards with an AK. I probably would with an AR, but I mean, at 0 to 100 yards, which is really what we're talking about, really 0 to 50 when you get down to urban situations, there's virtually no difference between the two. And, you know, the gun you have is better than no gun at all, and if it's an AK. And I don't mean to say that AKs are somehow inferior. I'm starting to like them more and more. You know, the ergonomics are different and all of that, and I've just sort of always used an AR. But the AKs, there's something about it. I love the ruggedness. I really, really like it. And you can have different guns for different uses. My goodness, you can have sort of the nice AR that's, you know, and maybe in more pristine conditions you use it, and it's your favorite, and your hands know where everything is and all that, and that's great. You know, everyone can have a favorite. But there could be a lot of situations where you pick up an AK and, or maybe you're out, I hope this doesn't happen, out in the woods for a month or something like that. And I'd probably rather have an AK in that situation than an AR. So
yeah,
we're lucky to be able to use both. There are no limitations. I mean, you know, money's a factor, obviously. I mean, it's two rifles, two sets of magazines, two sets of ammunition, all of that other stuff. But if you can afford it and all of that, and if it's legal where you are, of course, why not have both? Why not use both very well? And why not use both for the uses that they're better than the other one for? I mean, why
yeah.
not?
Well, and you know what, Glenn? Let me get your opinion on this. You know, you mentioned this about 2 or 3 minutes ago. A distance of 50 yards, in my humble opinion, again, I'm not an expert. I haven't studied crime statistics. You know, I'm not some kind of a private investigator in a former life or anything like that. But I think that for civilian use, and again, I'm going to emphasize the word civilian, I really doubt that any of us are probably going to use our rifle past 50 to 75 yards.
I absolutely agree. That's where my red dot optics are sighted for, is 50 yards, and that's what I practice the most. I occasionally do longer range stuff just to be somewhat confident. I'm in my mid-40s. My eyesight is not what it used to be, and straining through a scope is kind of hard for me to do, but picking up that red dot at 0 to 50 or maybe 75 yards or whatever it is seems to work just about every time. So, yeah, I keep in mind what I would be using a rifle for. I'm not going to go hunt elk in Montana and do 700-yard shots, or I should say attempt to do 700-yard shots
right.
with an AK, and probably not with an AR, certainly not for game that big. I wouldn't use a 5.56 cartridge. So, yeah, you have to keep in mind what are the limitations of this thing, and what am I using it for? And when you keep those, when you keep the use and the limitations in lined up and consistent, you should do just fine, because you're going to have different tools in your toolbox. Sometimes you're going to use Phillips head and sometimes flat. I mean, it's just, you know, different tools for different uses.
And I get a kick out of all these guys, you know, they're all worried about, you know, what size are their groups at 100 or 150 yards. And they say, oh, well, you know, with the AK, I can't shoot my inch and three quarter groups at 100 yards like I can with my AR. And I read all that stuff and I listen to all that stuff and I think to myself, who cares? Okay, fine. Good for you. You can shoot an inch and a half at 100 yards with your AR-15. You know, and I want to say, dude, if the likelihood of you using your gun, your rifle is 50 to 75, hey, the AK is going to be just fine. You know, if you can only get a 2.5-inch group, hey, 2.5 is pretty small. I mean, if you can only get a 2.5-inch group with an AK at 50 yards, what's wrong with that?
Exactly, and it's better to know how to manipulate the weapons, an AK in particular, if we're talking about sort of also using an AK, to know how to manipulate it, to know how to hit, to know how to move with it, to know how to take it apart and put it back together. We all assume that if something bad happens, we'll just be surrounded by ARs. Well, maybe not. And there are a ton of AKs out there and SKSs when it comes to the use of 7.62x39 ammunition. It's a common caliber.
And I tell you what, during the ammo scare of last year, I call it the ammo scare of 2013, there was still more 7.62 available in my area than there was 223. I mean, 223 was nowhere, but 7.62x39 was, I remember even just like about a month or two after Sandy Hook, there was still 7.62 on the shelves.
Yep, and that is a testament. That's one of the things that you can do during every periodic ammo scare, and we seem to have one every year or two,
yeah,
is to go, and there's no better test of this. There's no internet forum that will discuss this with the kind of accuracy that your own eyes will have when you see it, and that is go and see what's still on the shelves. And 7.62, you're right, was still on the shelves when it comes to pistols. 40 was still on the shelves. I paid attention to that during the 2008-2009 ammo scare and wrote about it too. And so pay attention to what's available. There's no better test for what goes first in an ammo scare than an actual ammo scare, and then looking on the shelves and seeing what's there and what's not there.
It tells you what the majority of the gun owners in your area own.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And the manufacturing capacities. I mean, I imagine that 223 or 556, you know, there's X amount of manufacturing capacity, and there's, you know, 2X amount of demand or something like that. And the Russians make a lot of ammunition, and of course it has to get here on a ship and all that other stuff. So there's your limiting factor there. But manufacturing capacity is another component, not just demand. And when you add those two things together, you either have empty shelves or some product on shelves, and you see that with your own eyes, and that's the proof is in the pudding right there.
Exactly. Well, good. Congratulations on your AK sponsor, and I imagine once you get your C39, you're gonna tell us all about it and do a review and all that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll do it, and I'll take some photographs. I don't know if I'll do, you know, video of it, because I'm not really a video guy, but maybe I'll find someone who can do some video, and that'll be cool. And I can't wait. Yeah, because I'm gonna put it through its paces. I'm gonna not treat it like some pristine thing that, you know, I just got out of a box. I mean, this is, and people want to know, is this a good, reliable AK with a decent price point or not? I think I know what it's going to be, given that I've got three other Century Arms and they're great guns. But, you know, I guess if this thing is a total terrible product, you'll just probably never hear from me again, right?
But
mention it.
Well, and I'll go ahead and I'll invite you in advance, Glenn, if you'd like to come on my show and talk about it, we can do a whole interview review of the C39.
Oh, terrific. Yeah, I'll take some good notes, and I want to inform people about things. If I go and test one of these things out, and probably the team will be helping me too, and they are magnificent, and they know many, many things, and they have a lot more technical knowledge than I do. I mean, I'm conversant and all of that, but these guys really, really know these things. But we could really be informative and describe to people with some detail. That is to say, it wouldn't be something like, yeah, it's a great gun. Oh, okay, well, that's not very helpful. Can you tell me why? I mean, can you tell me, you know, what's really good about it, what could be improved, and all that other stuff? So, yeah, I'd be very, very happy to. It's just a cool world where, you know, you can have sponsors like this. It's just fantastic.
So, Glenn, are you saying that since you're the old man on the team, that you're more low-tech than those young guys?
Yes, I jokingly say to those guys, hey, I heard Ghostbusters is coming out on VHS. That's one of my favorite lines. No, I am lower tech. A couple reasons. I focus on other stuff, and these guys are younger. They have more disposable income, you know, fewer kids, and in some cases, no spouses, no wives, I guess. They're all guys. And so they have the time. I work absurd amounts of time, and they have more time and more disposable income. I know that's crazy. Well, I'm the lawyer. Wouldn't I just have buckets of money, actually.
Yeah.
negative.
Negative. people make that mistake, don't they?
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, I have higher overhead than these guys do. I have, you know, kids that need to go to college and all the other stuff. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's you know, not what it appears. So these guys have primarily more time and, in some cases, more disposable income. And they can keep up on all this stuff to the extent that I can't. But it's cool because I can rely on them. And when the guys on the team say, this is, for example, Surefire X300 weapons light for pistols, you know, the consensus of the guys on the team was, this is a great light. This is going to work good. And now all of us have them. All of our holsters fit them. We have replacement parts for them. We have, each of us has a replacement X300. And so my guys can inform me about stuff, which is doing a great service to the team, and we can standardize things, and that's good stuff. I mean, I do other things. I'm the guy with the cabin, for example. I'm the guy who writes books and does podcasts and gets AK sponsorships, and then the guys get a, you know, test fire and put an AK, a new AK, through its paces. So we all add something to the balance, and it's just that keeping up on the latest gear is some, I would do it if I could, but doggone day job gets in the way.
Yeah, those pesky day jobs. I got one of those too, and it gets in the way. and you know what, Glenn, that kind of leads us, let's shift gears here, that kind of leads us into the next topic that I wanted to talk about. And that is, offline, you and I were talking a little bit about hard work. And the reason I bring this up is because you and I kind of started in a similar mode, I guess. We were both everyday guys, and, you know, I had this, what I thought at that time was a real harebrained idea to start a podcast, and actually I started two of them in a month, and, you know, I'm still who I always have been, the everyday guy that just kind of fell in love with talking about something and putting it out on the air. And you kind of started the same way, just an average normal guy, as you write about in book one. And, you know, that realized the need to start prepping. And now here we are a few years later, both of us are starting to achieve some success in our little hobbies.
Exactly. I mean, you are doing a lot of shooting classes, very well reviewed, by the way. I hear good things about them. So, I mean, you're doing all these things. You're traveling around. You're meeting all these amazing people. That's one of the best, probably the best outgrowth of all of this has been the amazing people that I've met and all that, and I'm sure you would say the same. So we're getting to do this, and it isn't a level of work and, quite honestly, revenue that replaces a day job. It's not replacing mine, and I still really like my day job, and
I
a long time to achieve what I've achieved in my day job, and I'm not gonna
me too
you know get rid of that. But it allows us to go out and do these amazing things. And I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way, and I don't think it will, but we have lives that are unusual in a good way, and we get to do a lot of cool things that, you know, not everybody gets to do. I mean, you've met amazing people. You've shot with amazing people. You know, my goodness, I mean, I won't even go, you know, all the amazingly cool people I've met and all of that other stuff, and people like you, that I listened to their podcast for years, and then I'm on your podcast, or, you know, a YouTube channel that I've watched, and then my books get reviewed on that, and somebody, the host of the channel who I respect, says, wow, these are really great. I mean, stuff like that, all these things, and it does come from hard work, because there's no other way to do this. Now, if you don't have a day job, a regular day job, maybe this analysis would be different. But for normal guys like you and me, we have day jobs. So when do we do this stuff? Weekends and evenings. And it's something, I mean, I get up at, when do I get up? Between 4 and 4:30 every morning.
Yeah.
And I read emails. I go on Facebook and connect with people, and I do that sort of thing. There are a ton of business things. I mean, a sponsorship, for goodness sakes. I mean, there's an FFL thing. There's corresponding with Century Arms and all this other stuff. So there's all this business stuff. I'm not complaining at all, but I'm saying there's a business component. You know, work out, you know, go to work, get home, and it's about 7:30 at night, and then I pretty much, you know, eat dinner and fall asleep. and so then I do this, and then on the weekends, spend a lot of time. I spend time away from my family. Family is another part of this mix too. It's not just day jobs and then the gun job. There's plenty of other stuff going on, but it's fantastic because of the unique things that get to happen. And I hope I'm not getting too philosophical here, but
no, anyway, that's okay. A little philosophy is okay once in a while.
But this is the time of my life. I mean, this I've worked hard and all these people that I've met and all these characters that I've run into and all these thoughts I've had have sort of kind of come flowing out, you know, in the books and on podcasts and elsewhere now. And now's the time I'm doing all these amazing things that I've always wanted to do. And I couldn't slow down if I wanted to. I mean, it would seem like a waste for me to say, instead of, for example, you know, going and doing a class with you out in Seattle in August, that weekend, I'm just going to watch preseason football. I mean, it seemed like a waste. And it's not that I don't like football and all that other stuff. It's just, it doesn't seem like in this stage in my life with this unique set of circumstances, the best use of time. And so I'm just thrilled to be able to do this stuff. And I'm so humble. I still, even in describing this to you, Bob, I just can't even believe that these things are happening. So, and it's all hard work, but you know what? It's a labor of love. I don't work terribly hard at stuff I don't like. And here's an example, math. I hate math. I don't do math. So, you know, I'm not going to work hard at that. It's not like I'm Horatio Alger. I'm just this naturally hardworking guy. You have to get me fired up to get me to work this hard. And this topic, you know, not just guns, but hopefully persuading people to prepare for what I believe is coming, is something that I'm enormously enthused about and hopped up on and want to help people about. And so, yeah, I get up early in the morning and work really hard all day long and on the weekends and do all this stuff because it's important. And I haven't been able to say that at other times in my life. When I was just doing normal law stuff,
right,
I can't really say that it was important, and so I didn't say it was important. And quite honestly, I didn't get up nearly as early.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it is a labor of love. And, you know, I mean, the first couple years, you know, the first 18 months I started doing podcasts, I didn't make a dollar. And then finally, after about a year and a half of some fairly hard work, again, in my spare time, because I love my day job, you know, I was able to start paying some of the bills. And I'm perfectly honest. Yes, I make money doing what I'm doing. I don't make retirement money. I don't make full-time money. I make money to support my habit,
yep.
You know, and that's pretty much it. But where I'm going with this is that I want people listening to this to understand that if you find something that you love and you're willing to give it the time, anybody can do this. You know, you have to enjoy it. I wouldn't be doing this show and you wouldn't be writing your books and doing all your podcast appearances if you didn't like it and didn't enjoy it. And I want to encourage people, don't ever give up on what it is that you want to do, because the opportunities are out there. And I don't care what's happening in this country. I don't care how bad it gets. I still believe that people that learn how to adapt, people who learn how to learn a new skill, people who learn to reinvent themselves, I still think there's going to be opportunity for them.
Yeah, and we live in a time where the technology that we have allows us to do these things. You and I are speaking over the internet. Podcasting didn't exist a few years ago. And so now if you have a passion in a very, you know, maybe narrow niche, you can talk to a few hundred, a few thousand, tens of thousands of similar people who share your passion via the internet and podcasts and YouTube and all these other things and Facebook. So we have the technology now to let people like us that are passionate about something get out and talk to and interact with other people who share this interest and this passion. And that hasn't been true. 20 years ago, you and me could have never done this.
No, you're right. You're right. We could have never done it, and we wouldn't have had listeners or readers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a lot harder 20 or 30 years ago to publish books.
Oh, absolutely. There was no Amazon, and there was no self-publication. Now, I published a book through a traditional publisher, but still, there were a few giant blockbusters as far as, you know, titles and all of that, and that's what everybody read. There was there was no podcasting. There were radio stations, but they didn't exactly have, you know, shows on something that does not appeal to a general audience. Guns do not appeal to a general audience, so a radio station could never put it on. Maybe you would have had the Bob Main gun newsletter, and you would have photocopied it, you know, and mailed it out to a couple thousand people, and that, I guess, could happen, but who's going to pay you, you know, $20 a year for a typewritten gun newsletter? So, I mean, it just wasn't the same. And now we can do this. And that, of course, applies to everybody out there that has a passion. I mean, podcasting, it's not, I'm not going to say it's easy, and it's not necessarily cheap. I mean, there are more expenses involved in podcasting than people understand. I'm sure you know that. I mean, but others out there. And so, yeah, it takes a little bit of money, but you know, a few hundred dollars probably a year, you could get away with it. And it doesn't take a ton of technical expertise, and you can get out there and do it. And some of the podcasts I like the best are guys who don't have a ton of listeners, and they're just doing it because, and you can tell by their voice and the topics and the research they put into it, that they really, really want to get on the air and talk about this stuff. And that's fantastic.
You know, that was me. That was me. In about September of 2009, I started this show in, I think it was late August. And I'll never forget the first time I checked my stats. I had, I think it was 31 listeners. That was it, 31 people. And and I, at that time, I thought, well, this really, there's 31 people that want to hear what I have to say. But you're right. Some of those that don't have a lot of listeners, they are some of the best, and they're also some of the least commercial, and they have a lot of good content in them.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. So, you know, I want people to understand, you know, you can do what Glenn and I have done. Just you have to have the desire. You have to really be willing to learn. You got to be tenacious, and you can't quit. I had to teach myself how to record, edit, and publish a podcast. Nobody showed me how to do it. Google and Bing were excellent friends. Well, hang on a second. I don't think Bing existed then. Maybe it did, but Google was one of my best friends. And I'm self-taught.
You know, and here's another thing in our community, and that's, I'm going to say, the gun and prepper community. I think that's a fair characterization of most of your listeners. We're self-reliant folks. We're going to figure stuff out on our own. We're not going to have our hands held. We're not going to say, oh, I can't do that because nobody's going to put on a formal class and teach me how to do it. Well, if you're that kind of person, and most of you listening are, then this would seem to be right up your alley. You would just say, well, doggone it, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to learn how to do it. I'm going to learn something new. I mean, when it comes to prepping and things, I didn't know anything about water treatment or food storage or any of these things. And I said, well, I'm not going to go to college and get a PhD on this. I mean, that's crazy. I'm going to learn it, and Google is my friend, and forums and all that other stuff. So part of the self-reliant mindset would, I think, indicate – that you would say, I'm going to do this, and doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And take inspiration. I want people to understand this. Take inspiration from other people doing the same thing that you're doing. You know, learn from them. I'm happy to help anybody that wants to launch a podcast, tell them how to do it. You know, a couple of podcasts that exist today that are doing pretty well, I remember the emails I got from them, you know, asking me, hey, what do I do? How do I do this? How do you do this, Bob? How did you produce it and put it up there and things like that? So take inspiration from people that are doing what you want to do. Learn from them. Offer to help them. That's another thing. You know, offer to help them.
You know, and you've answered those emails, and I get emails and Facebook personal messages from people saying, thinking about writing a book, you know, what's some advice you have? And I answer every one of them. I answer everything I get because I can't believe anybody really wants to hear my opinion. So I'm thrilled to be asked, right? And so I'm going to, you know,
yeah,
answer this stuff. But it's an honor and to answer those questions. And guys like us that are passionate about this, that just started doing this and are humble and can't believe, you know, that people are listening to us or reading us and things like that, we love to answer these questions. So the kind of people, if you're thinking about doing something out there, the kind of people you would ask about how to do it are the kind of people who love to answer those questions and love to help people. So it's perfect.
And I want to say this, if you're trying to put out a podcast and you're struggling,
or if you're a brand new firearms trainer, for example, and you're struggling, I've been there, so I'm more than willing to help you out. I do have limited time resources, but whatever time I can muster up, I'm more than happy to help, because I've been there. And I didn't, you know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't get a whole lot of help starting the podcast. I got a lot of help becoming a firearms trainer. You know, I want to thank John Payne and the folks over at Suarez International for signing me on. And I want to thank Ben Branham for teaming up with me and deciding to, you know, give me a shot. Because if it hadn't been for those two organizations, I wouldn't be in it. But I'd be very willing to help. And, you know, I want to take this opportunity real quick. I want to thank the Gun Rights Radio Network. You know, if Mark hadn't have signed me on to the network, if he hadn't brought me on, I think it was like episode 56 or 57, if he hadn't done that, I don't think I'd be where I was today. My listenership, like, tripled within a month after I got on the Gun Rights Radio Network.
And that's how I found out about you, by the way.
Really? Okay, well, see, so Mark, if you're listening, there you go. There's a testimony for your network. And I think, I don't know if he listens to every one of my shows, but he could be listening to this one. So, good. Well, we covered that topic. I think we have a class to talk about.
Heck yeah. Well, you and I are going to be teaming up. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
I'm looking forward to it. Well, first of all, the date is August 9th. It's a Saturday. The class is actually going to be up in Sequim, which, for people in the Seattle area, what is it, about 2.5 hours?
Yeah, I'd say so. It depends on where in the Seattle area you're coming from. It's across the Puget Sound, so if you're coming from Seattle, you'll be going west and you'll be taking a ferry. If you're coming from out of town and you're at the airport, I highly suggest that you take a ferry because it's a cool experience.
Yeah, I've done it. So Ben Branham and I are going to be teaching Beyond Concealed Carry. We're going to be teaching a little bit different version of it because you're going to be there and you're going to bring some different material to the class. I think you're gonna give a little bit of a lecture about carrying a gun in Washington, aren't you?
Yeah, the legal aspects of it. And when I do firearms training with the team, I do a legal portion, and I just read some statutes. I've kept up on it. I've followed some things. But in May, I'm going to be going to a Mag 40 class, and I'm going to have Masad Ayoub teaching me legal things. So after May, my legal knowledge on firearms self-defense law will be way better than it currently is, and I can, you know, pass some of that stuff on. So I'll be doing a little legal portion, which I love to do. It's kind of neat how it's a combination of law and guns, and it intersects right there at self-defense law.
Well, Glenn, let me tell you this. Sorry to interrupt. Let me tell you this. You have no idea, buddy. You have no idea what you're going to learn at Mag 40. I've been to that class twice. The first time as a student, and the second time I helped out doing a little bit of the shooting. Well, I didn't do the instruction, but I helped out a little bit as a safety officer on the line. You have no idea, you know, and especially when you combine what Masad Ayoub teaches you with what you already know about the law, you're going to have an amazing script that you can teach people.
Yeah, and I can't wait, and I should probably give a little bit of detail about it. It's going to be May 16th through 19th. It's going to be in Arkansas at Nighthawk Customs. That means John Hottaway is involved, and we had a conversation about that. And
well, it's going to be a bad class then if he's there.
Yeah, he's a mean man. He makes people cry.
Yeah, he makes people cry. He's a mean man, and, you know, the bathrooms suck at that place. So
really? I did not know that.
Oh, I know if John's listening, he's going to get a chuckle out of that. Just, you know, get used to the porta-potties.
Okay.
Unless he's changed that, I don't know. But yeah, you'll face the Hottaway curse, I'm telling you.
Wow, that sounds like eating at a bad restaurant or something like that.
Oh, he might even take you to a bad restaurant or two also.
Okay. Well, I can eat anything. I mean, I'm a prepper. I mean, if it's beans and rice or whatever it is, I mean, I can handle it. So that's going to be Mag 40 in May, and then we're doing our thing, you and me and Ben. And you guys are coming to Seattle. I can't wait to show you my beautiful state. Now, I complain about my state on a political level, and I complain about the weather when it rains from about October till about April. But I'm telling you something, Western Washington, the Seattle area, in August is magnificent. The weather, it's like probably 70 to 75 degrees. There are no bugs. There's no snakes. There's no humidity. It's it's amazing. And we're going to be this facility we're going to is stunning, and it's right on the Puget Sound, which is to say basically the ocean. It's amazing. It's got two ranges. It's got a beautiful classroom. It's got a bunkhouse that sleeps, I don't know, 10 to 20 people. It's got, you know, a nice set of bathrooms, unlike the Hottaway experience I'm apparently going to have. And it's a magnificent place. It's run by an amazing guy. And I'm just going to, I don't know, throw a little news out there and give people a little clue about some of the stuff in the book. The guy who runs the facility is the real Joe Tantori. He is Joe Tantori from the books, and so I know him very well. He's a very good friend, and it's just a phenomenal experience. The team and I spend as many weekends as possible at this range and this facility doing all kinds of cool stuff, and it's going to be an experience. So I cannot wait.
I can't wait either, and we've already got two or three people that have – well, actually, at the time that we're talking right now, we've got six people signed up for this class already. You and I are interviewing on January 10th, and the class is not till August. We've already got six people signed up. There is going to be a limit. Two or three of those people are going to be staying in the bunkhouse with us. So I want people to understand, we do have room at the bunkhouse if you want to come up there and spend Friday night and spend Saturday night, which I'd recommend because you're going to be real tired. And if you don't want to drive after that, then let me know when you sign up. We have limited space in the bunkhouse. But the class, I guess I got to say, the class is probably close to being a third full already.
Yeah, no, it's going to sell out. And I have commitments from several members of the Real Live team to come up and be at the bunkhouse and be up there. Now, I don't know which ones, and can actually end up making it. So I don't want to say they'll all be there, and it is quite a ways in advance. And a couple of them said that they can be there, but there's possibility, you know, they're young guys, you know, I don't know what they do for fun, but no, they'll probably come and do this. But, so some of them will probably be there, which is amazing because they're amazing human beings.
Yeah. And by the way, Glenn, I've spent a lot of time in the Seattle area. My late uncle lived there for 27 years, and we went to visit him quite a bit. He lived in Kirkland for a while, and then he lived in Lake Forest Park. Mm-hmm. So he was there for a long time. So I've been up there. I've been up there in the summer. I've been up there in July and August, and it is magnificent. So we're going to be teaching our enhanced version of our Beyond Concealed Carry class. It's a one day, and I want to let you know, we're probably going to go till pretty close to 6 p.m. I mean, with your lecture, I think we're going to have a working lunch, and it's going to be a great time. And I understand most likely one of the team members is going to train with us, right?
That's right. That's right. And so, it's going to be cool. And we'll announce like who exactly will be coming from the team closer to the event when they can be more certain that they can come and do that. But yeah, there will be at least one team member, and he's one of the more interesting ones.
So if you really want to go to this class, I'm not trying to put a salesman pitch on you. I'm telling the exact truth here. You know, with six people already signed up and it's early January, this thing's going to sell out. So jump on it. You can go to handgunworld.com. You'll see I got a registration link. I have a page there that says Beyond Concealed Carry with Glenn Tate. And that just click that and you can follow the instructions. Glenn, just curious, what gun are you going to bring to that?
Well, when I go to classes, I actually train and learn because, I mean, it's a great opportunity. So I'm going to bring my regular sidearm. I guess my concealed carry pistol too, which will be my Glock 17. And since it is concealed carry, I'll be wearing my concealed holster, my Raven concealment holster. I'll probably also bring the other pistol I often carry concealed, which would be my Glock 27. By that time in August, I might have a Glock 26 barrel and some magazines because I'm probably going to go to a Glock 26. So between the 17 and the 27/26, that'll be what I bring. And on occasion, I carry an LCP, and I should listen to you and Ben and actually shoot the pocket pistols that I carry instead of just letting them literally gather lint in my pocket holster, right?
So, how much have you shot that LCP?
You know what? I shot it you're not going to believe this. I shot it on New Year's Day 10 days ago at the Joe Tantori range. But I hadn't shot it before then for about a year, and I scolded myself because that was wrong. And let me tell you something. There was lint in the action, in the magazines, and it was not good. And I thought to myself, I need to be a better example because, I mean, I wouldn't suggest anybody goes that long without shooting it. And in all candor, I really didn't enjoy it. I mean, it's an LCP.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to knock Ruger. I'm not trying to be a Ruger hater here, so please don't. I hope nobody accuses me of that. But I've shot one of those quite a bit, and I think they're very unpleasant. I don't like them just because they don't shoot very well, and most people don't want to train with that gun because it's unpleasant to shoot. I love my Carr P380. That thing is just phenomenal. It's soft recoiling, more accurate than I'll ever be with it. And just, you know, weighs almost nothing. And I suggest that, and by the way, Carr just came out with a CW380, a little bit less expensive version of it. I'm a big believer in Carr Arms pistols when it comes to these little single stack 380s or 9mm.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think what I might do is retire the LCP. I got one in 2010, you know, when a lot of people got LCPs. They're fine guns. It's the gun I end up having with me all the time. It fits in a particular place in the truck that's lockable, by the way. And so I have it with me, and I need something that small and that thin. I can pop it in a pocket. You know, when I don't have time to put a holster on, the classic phrase about pocket pistols is it's the gun you carry when you can't carry a gun.
Right.
And that is really true. And so I would want something nice and small like that. You know, the Glock 27-26 is a little bit thicker and has a different role. But I'm kind of looking to replace that LCP with something. You know, the LCP was, I think, $250 when I got it. I mean, they're pretty reasonably priced. And I should look into some of those things. Single stack. I'd like to go with 9, upgrade over 380. I would just have to see some of the sizes. But it's a different universe, is my point, from 2010. When it comes to small 9s and 380s for small concealed carry, it is a whole new planet as far as the amount of products that are out there. And, I mean, SHOT Show is coming up in a couple of days. There will probably be 10 or 15 really good pistols in the parameters I just mentioned that'll probably be introduced this year at SHOT Show. So there's a ton more to choose from. So I had to take that into consideration and step it up. The trigger pull on the LCP, I haven't measured it, but it's probably about 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, it probably is. You know, and again, I'm going to go on my Carr promotion stint here, not because they're paying me or anything. I don't receive a dollar for it, but you can get the Carr 380. You can get that little CW 380. I see one right now for $325 on GunBroker. So they're not that expensive. They're not much more than an LCP. In fact, they're actually probably a little bit less money than the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard, which also has a horrendous trigger pull. I have one. It's a good gun. Nothing wrong with it. But, yeah, with these little pocket 380s, I just think that there's better options out there than the LCP.
Well, I have a joking phrase on the team, and it goes something like this. I say, well, I don't want to one-up anybody, but I do have an LCP.
That's good. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I got to tell people, the very first little pocket 380 I had was a Kel-Tec P380. And nothing wrong with it. That little Kel-Tec I had, that thing just ran and ran and ran. But again, it's a super light gun with a horrendous trigger pull and no sights. And, you know, it is what it is. I think I picked it up for like $239 or something like that.
Yep. And all this being said, and I've kind of, you know, cast aspersions on the LCP, I'll say this, it's better than a gun you don't have. And if you have an LCP or you're thinking about getting one and it's the one you can afford, please, by all means, do indeed get it.
Absolutely.
The things we're talking about, things like trigger pull, it's not going to be a big deal when you have to defend your life. You will get the trigger all the way back. If it's 11 pounds versus 8-pound trigger pull or 6 or something, you're going to get the job done. The distances we're talking about, it's not going to be a problem. And so please, you know, we're not gun snobs. I know you've said that before, and I know it's true from talking to you off the air. We're not gun snobs. We're talking about something a little bit better than an LCP, and that's where it is. But, you know, that LCP, I'm never going to sell it. I mean, it's a great gun on a variety of levels. It has a bunch of good uses, and maybe I can just – you've got me intrigued about Carr because I know that Carr arms have a very good reputation for being very well-made and very reliable. I always assumed – they were pretty expensive, and when you're telling me these prices, I'm thinking, well, that's kind of cool.
Well, they have been expensive. The P series of the Carr models, like the PM9 and the P380, they're a little up there. They're over $500. But the C series, like the CW380s, like I said, here's another one on GunBroker for $310, brand new, and they have good sights on them. They got good barrels. But yeah, I'm with you. Hey, if an LCP is all you can afford and you can get one and you need one, get it. If a Kel-Tec is all you can get it. I mean, it's better than not having a gun at all. I think I've said that 150 times on my show over the past 4 years. You know, the 380 in your pocket that you have on you is 100 times better than the bigger gun that you left in the safe.
Absolutely. And these LCPs and probably similar size guns, It's almost spooky how they can fit into pockets with a correct pocket holster, I would like to add, and into little places, little crevices in cars and all that other stuff. There's virtually no excuse for not having a gun when it comes to one of these small 380s. I mean, they will fit anywhere. In a shirt pocket, in a dress shirt, I can pretty much put the LCP in there. I mean, it's a little bit visible. But when you start getting into spaces that, you know, credit cards fit well in, you know that you're talking about small spaces. So,
yeah,
they're very, very versatile.
And since you mentioned pocket holsters, one that I want to point out is the DeSantis Superfly. I used to use the DeSantis Nemesis, but the Superfly does a better job of covering the trigger guard. The outside of it is much more sticky than the Nemesis, and I totally love it. And it comes with a panel on the outside of the holster that affixes with Velcro. So the panel, if you don't want to use it, like some people like to put that in their back pocket so it looks like a wallet. I just took it off because I carry it in my right front pocket. And it's just, I love the Superfly. It's a nice little holster. I think it's only like $25. You can get it off of my Amazon store and stuff like that. I like it. It's durable. In fact, I probably need to get another one just to have it so that when mine wears out, I got another one.
And I have one of those two. I don't know which it is. It doesn't have the sticky stuff. It might be the Nemesis, the DeSantis. And it's a great, great thing. And I will not carry that pistol without a holster for the pockets, because if you have your car keys in there and you jam that thing in there, you've got car keys, you know, on the trigger, and that's a bad thing, and don't do that.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to say something to ladies listening to this podcast. Ladies love to buy these little 380s and throw them in their purse. Okay, if you're going to do that, ladies, use a pocket holster and put it in your purse inside of a pocket holster. Trust me, when you draw that gun, it's not going to be too hard to leave that pocket holster in your purse. As a matter of fact, if you stick that gun like in a side pocket of your purse and it's in the pocket holster, it's probably going to naturally stay put when you pull the gun anyway. So use a pocket holster, please. We don't want accidents happening, you know, with like keys or other objects pressing the trigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, hey, I want to finish with this. I'm going to tell you a story, Glenn. I didn't tell you I was going to tell you this story. And listeners are going to, I think, well, let's see what listeners think of this. I got to tell you a story about something that happened to me Tuesday night. I was in a hotel room in Houston, Texas. I was on a business trip. And while I was talking on the phone, it was about 8 o'clock at night, in my hotel room, I heard an incredibly loud noise coming from the room across the hall, directly across the hall. There was this loud boom, and it sounded like an explosion. And I thought for a minute there, I thought that maybe something in the hotel, you know, ignited or blew up or something like that. So I ended my phone conversation, and my Glock 19 was sitting on the table. And then my a thought started racing through my head. Maybe it's a guy in the hotel with a gun. Maybe it's a nutbag, and he's trying to shoot the place up. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I cannot believe that I might actually be in this kind of a situation. And I'm not embellishing this story at all. This is exactly the way it happened. My Glock 19 was sitting in its holster on the table. I threw that thing, appendix carry, threw it right back in my waistband, threw my shirt over it, and I waited for a while. I waited about, a good 3 to 4 minutes, because I wanted to find out if the shooting was going to continue. Because I thought there had to have been a gunshot. It couldn't have been an explosion because there were no fire alarms going off or anything. I picked up the phone. I called down to the front desk, and I asked them if they had heard the noise and if anybody had called 911 yet. And they said, yeah, we heard the noise. We had called 911. Perhaps that should have been my first instinct, but unfortunately it wasn't. So picture me. So I walked to the door of my hotel, and I looked through the peephole, and there are two police officers standing in front of the room across the hall from me where I heard the loud noise. So I pried the door. I pulled the door open about 4 to 5 inches, and I asked one of the officers, I said, you know, officer, is there a problem going on here? Is everything, you know, okay? And one of the cops said, yeah, everything is okay. He said, not to worry. He said, the guy who was staying in this room accidentally shot himself in the hand with his pistol.
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. And, of course, now I had my Glock 19. I was packing it underneath my shirt, untucked shirt, in my waistband. So then I opened the door a little bit further, and I said, really? And here's where it gets interesting. One of the police officers turns around and he says, yeah, he said, now don't worry about it, sir. The guy had his license and everything. And I thought to myself, oh, yeah, I'm feeling really good about this now. The guy had his license. Obviously, the guy was a complete knucklehead, because you shouldn't be shooting yourself in the hand with your own handgun. So, and then I looked down at the floor and I saw this little pool of blood about the size of a paper plate in front of the door. And the police officer said, well, the guy has already been taken to the hospital and all that. And he said, you know, we've recovered the projectile and everything is okay. I said, well, what on earth happened? He says, well, we don't know. He said, but what we do know is that the projectile went up into the ceiling, bounced off of a light fixture, and ricocheted back down to the floor, and we recovered the projectile. And I thought to myself, all I'm picturing is this doofus, you know, messing around with a loaded gun, which he shouldn't have been. You know, he's violating at least 3 rules of the 4 rules of gun safety. Thank God he didn't have his muzzle pointed in an unsafe direction, probably up at the ceiling if it went through or bounced off of a light fixture. And, you know, it was a negligent discharge. And so when I went back to my room, I thought, wow, I was that close. I was in the room right across the hall. I was that close to some idiot possibly touching off a round and maybe coming into my hotel room.
Wow. By the way, I'm no ballistics expert, but a bullet hitting a light fixture and bouncing, I mean, what was it, a 22 or something? I mean, that should have just blown the thing up, right?
Yeah, which I find a little hard to believe. That's what the cop told me, because they found the damaged light fixture and then they found the projectile on the floor. I don't know. I mean, who knows if it was a pretty sturdy steel light fixture and the bullet hit it the right way. I don't know. Again, I'm not much into ballistics either, but The whole experience, you know, I thought I was in the middle of an active shooter situation, to be honest with you. Especially when I saw the cops out my door, I thought, and I probably shouldn't have even opened the damn door. I probably just should have stayed in my room with pistol in hand until I really knew that there was nothing going on. But I figured that the two cops standing in front of the door probably had things under control.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And the other thing is, you didn't hear a shot and go rushing in there with pistol drawn, and let's say the police are coming around the corner and all they see is Bob Main. Well, they don't know who is Bob Main, but they see you trying to get into somebody's room with a pistol drawn. I mean, that's a problem, too. Now, you want to react and help people. If it's an active shooter, you want to take them down quickly. So there's a bit of a balancing act going on here. I'm not saying it's easy, but you always, and it sounds like you did this, you always have to be aware when you have a gun out that you can't maybe see the police, and they have no idea that you're the good guy. I know you've been through that before, but
oh, exactly, which is why I'm glad I didn't take that sort of action, you know, which is why I called, because I was ready to, I had my cell phone out, I was ready to call 911, but then when I found out somebody at the front desk had already called 911, then it was pretty obvious because the cops were already there by the time I looked out the peephole of the door. But,
yeah,
you know, here's what I want to say. This is why I'm telling the story. I don't care how well trained you are. When you're actually in a situation to where you're close to gunfire, like I was last Tuesday night, you can't be sure how you're going to act. You really, really, really need to go over this and over it and over it and over it until it becomes second nature. Because when I was debriefing myself, I realized I made some mistakes.
Yep. Oh, and it's a great thing that you can go through this and debrief and realize what the mistakes were.
Exactly. Mistakes that I know I won't repeat again. But it was freaky. It was freaky being, I mean, I've been close to gunfire, of course, in a training class, but everybody's shooting downrange. We make sure they're shooting downrange. But this was a gunshot that went off near me, and I had no idea who was firing, which way was the gun pointed, was there going to be more gunfire, was this thing over, was it an accident, did somebody die, what's going on? All this is going through my head. And thank God none of my family members were with me.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I was by myself, but I wanted to tell that story because while it's fresh in my mind, it was kind of a peculiar situation.
Yeah, well, I hope the guy's okay.
Apparently. I mean, they said he shot himself in the hand. You know, might not have much of a hand, much use of his hand for maybe for the rest of his life. I don't know. I don't know what kind of damage he did, but I'm sure he's still with us if he only shot himself in the hand.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's my story. It took a little bit more, it took a little longer than to tell it than I thought, but Glenn, the floor is yours. I like to give my guests the floor at the end to wrap up and say whatever they want to say.
Well, I would just like to, I don't know, amplify some of the things we said about the hard work thing. And I've been thinking about this conversation we've had, and I don't want to sound trite or sound like a after school special that says you can do it. But, you know, if you're out there and you think that there's something you want to add to this community, this gun community or prepper, whatever you want to call it, do it, because the time is now with technology and you can do this. And both you and I, Bob, are living examples of regular guys who never thought this would really be likely. I'm not going to say we thought it was impossible, because we would have done it if we thought it was impossible, but you and I both thought it's pretty unlikely that we would do these things we're doing. And then you can do them, and it's a blast. It's addictive. I couldn't stop doing this stuff if I tried. I mean, Bob, when you said, hey, do you want to do a podcast interview? It's like just an instant reaction of saying yes. I mean, I'm addicted to this. It's fun. It's a blast.
It is.
And it makes a more full and complete life, and that's kind of what it's all about. So I would encourage people out there.
I'm addicted to it also. You're right. It does kind of make a more full and complete life, both prepping and, you know, learning about firearms. Both of them, it really, you know, and something else too. People that listened to my show last week when I had John Hottaway on, John talked about fellowship. He talked about how doing some of these types of things builds great fellowship. I'm sure you found that to be true.
Well, especially with the team.
Yeah. Yeah. But even outside of your team, I'm sure this has opened doors and helped create friends you probably wouldn't have otherwise had.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, talk about book 7 real quick before we sign off.
Well, yeah, book 7 of the series, 299 Days, came out on December 10th, and it's been doing very well, been getting some great reviews on Amazon. Folks who've read the books, I need to mention this, please review them on Amazon. It is enormously helpful. Amazon's magic algorithm computers or whatever pay great attention to books that have more reviews. And so it's very important to do that to help the book. But it came out. It was a blast ride. It's one of my favorite of the books that have come out. And it sets things up. And I'm sorry, some people are a little mad at me about this, but book seven sets up things so that you're just going to be compelled to read book eight. You're going to be like, how long is it going to be till book eight is out? Oh my goodness. Are you just toying with us? No, I'm not toying with you. We're talking about how busy we are. Probably March, if I had to guess, is when book eight will come out. So it takes a while. They're all written and everything, but just the editing, we edit these things several times, the publisher, the editor, and I, and proofreaders. So it's not a simple process. But anyway, book seven will make you want to read book eight. So, you know, warning, it's addictive.
But that's okay. I think all of yours have been addictive. I've gotten a lot out of every single one of them. And even though it makes you hungry for more, that's okay because they're all so good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, they're real good. So your first book came out when?
It was September 1st of 2012.
Okay, so it's been not even a year and a half yet.
That's right, and we're all the way up to book seven. Eight will be about March. Book nine will be about the summer of 2014. And book 10 will be before Thanksgiving of 2014. So we'll end the 10-book series in 2014. But it looks like there's going to be more stuff. I'll just leave it at that. So there's going to be more stuff.
That's great, Glenn. That's another great teaser. That's awesome.
I wish I could tell you, but...
But then you'd have to kill me. Glenn, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us on the show again, Glenn. I appreciate it. Folks, this is Glenn. This was Glenn Tate interviewing with me, author of the best-selling book series, 299 Days. Hey, real quick, before I let you go, give out the website.
299days.com.
299days.com.
Yep.
Thanks, Glenn.
Thank you, Bob.
Have a good one.
You too.
Well, many thanks to Glenn. Folks, these people donate their time to come on my show. You know, time is one of those assets that is not renewable. And I don't know about you, but I'm very picky about how I spend my time. So with that said, I want to let you know that I hope I've made your time worthwhile with this podcast. You know, I try to make these podcasts as hard-hitting as I can. And what I mean by hard-hitting is I try to give you some value for what you're listening to. And I want you to take away one or two pearls of wisdom or an idea. You know, maybe some of these shows give you an idea to start working on, and maybe it's a refresher, maybe it's a reminder of something that maybe you need to do. So if you take away one thing from each show, then I think my goal has been achieved and your time has been well spent. I also don't want to forget to mention Sturdy Belts. www.sturdybelt.com. I'm wearing my Sturdy Belt today. David Scaife's company. Excuse me. Sorry about that, David. Got a little tongue-tied there. Check it out. It's a great belt. If you want a belt that doesn't look like a gun belt, check out sturdybelt.com. And of course, Concealment Solutions. I love their holsters. Concealment Solutions. Hey, by the way, also, you know what? For appendix carry, I really like the Dale Fricke Archangel, but I've also been playing around with On Your Six Designs, so check out onyoursixdesigns.com. They are giving discounts to Shooters Club members. If you're a member of our Shooters Club, you get a discount at On Your Six Designs. So that's cool stuff. Speaking to the Shooters Club, we just put up a brand new video on gun takeaways. Good stuff up there. Ben and I did some filming recently, so check it out. If you're not a member of the Shooters Club, what are you waiting for? I'm giving away my Shield pistol, my 9mm Shield. We're giving away 250 rounds of ammunition. We're giving away two tickets to any of the training classes that Ben and I do. We're giving away a range bag. A lot of cool stuff. We might even add more between now and June 30th. If you're an active member of our Shooters Club, you get to participate in that. And by the way, The videos are very instructional. You're going to get some excellent ideas from the videos. If you can't make it to one of our classes, that's the next best thing. It's only $75 a year or $8 per month. Go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com if you want to get signed up for that. And by the way, sturdybelt.com, they're giving away discounts, or they're giving discounts to members of the Shooters Club as well. And don't forget American Gun Oil. I'm going to put in the show notes a special link. I love American Gun Oil. It's great. One thing I like about it is it's not too thick, but it does the job. So you can get some free shipping if you buy American Gun Oil, and you'll see all these links to everything I'm talking about, including to my Amazon store and Glenn's books, in the show notes for this episode number 264 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Well, let's see. I guess that's about it. Oh, hey, there's still time to get signed up for our night fighting class. Ben and I are teaching low light night fighting February 8th in San Antonio. And for you North Texas and Southern Oklahoma folk, we're coming up to Dallas in March. We're doing pistol fighting dynamics. It's a full day, March 8th. We're coming up to Dallas again. So a lot of you have been emailing me and asking when you come into Dallas again, Bob and Ben. Well, it's in March. Close range gunfighting by Suarez International. CRG2. It's a different curriculum, folks. If you have already taken CRG, you're going to like this one, because not only will it be a little bit of a review, you're going to learn some cool new stuff, like, for example, some point shooting techniques. I am teaching that April 5th and 6th. There's a link on my website to go to the sign-up page for Suarez International's Close Range Gunfighting. And don't forget about Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced with John Hottaway. Last week, he was on the show talking about that. That one is also going to be a sellout out in Arkansas. I'm looking forward to shooting one of his Walther PPQs. I want to check that pistol out. Okay, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop, and I really think the loudest sound that a shooter can hear is a bang when he's expecting a click, or that dreaded click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.